What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
What Really Happened on republicbroadcasting.org. This is Larkin, Texas, standing in for Mike Rivero today. And I think we still have Glenn in Philly on the line. Glenn, are you still there?
Yes, Lark, I'm here.
Well, great. Forgive me for the break there, and then we were cut off.
No. Please continue. We were good. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I was just sort of sticking up for the, you know, the essential terms of rhetoric and dialectics, that they're not inherently evil, though, you know, rhetoric has become a pejorative in the modern parlance because people engage in so much empty or hollow rhetoric. So the word, you know, instead of the words empty and hollow, being the operative term, that the rhetoric itself that gets picked on, and rhetoric is just, a discussion of contrasting ideas or, conflicting opinions and stuff like that. And then, rhetoric is the art of persuasive speech, I should say. Dialectics is about considering, dualities or contradictions or, contrasting opinions and stuff like that.
And your points are well taken. Your points are well taken in this regard, sure.
Yeah, so I had the advantage of attending a Christian college in the 80s where the philosophy department still taught philosophy along classic lines, as it, would have been studied for hundreds of years. I think it's interesting that I believe it was Herod who said to Jesus, "What is truth?" And that line's in the New Testament, but people don't realize he was quoting a Roman philosopher named Cato. So philosophy was run even back then. And that question is, what is truth, is especially hollow, given that he was addressing it to the living truth. It was right there before him. But the Hegelian dialectic, stuff is inherently manipulative, just like communitary, warm, fuzzy sounding terms like communitarianism, and it's all rooted in deception. The one thing, in studying philosophy, like classic philosophy, we learned five of the big divisions were ontology, cosmology, epistemology, ethics, and aesthetics. I don't want to get into the details of that, but I would mention epistemology, which is the study of the means of certainty. It's how do you know? How do you know what's true? And then for, you know, again, hundreds of years, varying philosophers and schools, you know, these bigwig, well-known philosophers, study their works in school. The distinction was, the contradiction was between the empirical and the rational. What we would call today the material, you know, material sciences versus the language arts or something. You know, like, so we see this, and the reason this is pertinent for us is that, you know, even today we have people running around promoting things, and when you ask for empirical evidence, you know, you say, okay, well, how do I know, you know, what's true? Well, these Hegelians and communitarians and the great would-be tyrants and manipulators, whether hard tyrants or soft tyrants, you know, they don't want to be questioned, and you ask them, well, how do you, you know, notice? Well, they don't have empirical evidence. One of the best recent examples is when Bernie Sanders was questioned by a reporter about how he intended to fund, you know, his educational subsidies. You know, well, how much is this going to cost, and where are you going to get the money? Well, you know, how much? And he's like, well, I can't keep track of every nickel and dime. So he's alluding, you know, to a program he wants to implement, which would cost many, many billions of dollars, and he tries to beg off. He has no empirical knowledge of what he's advocating. He doesn't have, you know, the interviewer cited some, you know, approximations for costs, and he just wants you to accept his chicken in every pot, car in every garage rhetoric without any proof. So, you know, without any empirical measurements or surveys or anything. So this is the perennial, this distinction between the empirical, the measurable, and the intellectual, or, you know, the rational. And so here we are, thousands of years down the pike from, you know, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, still, you know, dealing with that duality of correlating what you're thinking and what you're saying with physical reality.
And of course, today there's a movement afoot today to get away from epistemological underpinnings in terms of and more a move towards ontological underpinnings. You know, today, you know, you have to realize that if you do a search Lark on communitarianism, you're going to see words in there like Kabbalism. Well, you know, how best might you describe Kabbalism in today's world? I mean, there's a million words attached to this subject and this school of thought. And, right. You know, it's not just a Judaic kind of a Kabbalism. There's a Christian Kabbalism today. You can do a search about that, too. But, yeah. You know, I know as a Christian, you would probably disagree. But it boils down to really just two short sentences. There is no truth. Only opinions matter.
Right, or the language itself is marginalized in so many ways. If we look at all the confusion caused by the gender role issue, we had National Woman's Day the other day, and the one I saw it featured on the news, and there's this woman speaking at this event and says something absurd like, "Well, it's not just about women; it's really about all of us." And I'm thinking, how pathetically ridiculous! No, it's about women. We've designated the day for the topic to be that. And they turn around and say to go up to the podium and try and say it's really about all of us. It's like, no, we're highlighting the role of women.
And remember, International Women's Day was originally a Soviet holiday. And now it's an international holiday. So I find quite fitting. There was that word convergence that was being bandied about quite a bit 15, 20 years ago. And really when we talk about one world governance or management and a system, they have to bring all the religions together that witness the interfaith dialogues. You know, look at the phenomenon called Tikkun Olam. And, you know, the World Council of Churches begun in the early part of the 20th century with Rockefeller money and the like. They have to have a one religion and a one world law. And this thing called convergence was about bringing together the East and the West. In other words, the systems, the economic systems, the social systems, the political systems of the People's Republic of China, the former Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, with that of what has emerged today as the European Union, and, of course, what we style capitalism generally here in the West. So it's a merger of socialism and or communism and capitalism. And that's why we got to understand that there is such a thing today as the third way. And we're, if we don't become familiar with this kind of stuff, we don't realize how we're being stripped and why we're being stripped of our rights to ownership of property. Remember, property is that space between your ears. It's your body.
Well, and this is where Chris Hinckley is so good at this stuff. He have a text or another to point. I mean, as you were talking there, I was just thinking a la Alvin Toffler, you know, Future Shock and Third Wave and all that kind of stuff. You pervert the interests of any one subgroup in the name of diversity to create anything but diversity. You end up with one big gray massive blob of uniformity, you know, and or you look at how the interests of women, for example, you know, we talk about Bernays and the suffrage movement and women smoking, torches of liberty and all that. You pick any one group and manipulate it in the name of promoting its unique interests, and then what you end up with is what you basically always end up with: tyrannical oligarchy at the top. You know,
rule, not rule. Too long ago, the late George Gordon did an address, and he also wrote an accompanying article, and it was simply entitled, "Are You a Practicing Communist?" And I would urge everybody to read that. We have to ask ourselves, are we living in a communist system today?
Well, and now this makes me think of John Moore, you know, or J.R. Nyquist, he brings on his, and they would say, well, hopefully not, but they're certainly trying to make inroads, you know, and if you look at this, whether it's, you see, because what's funny is, you know, people might look at someone like Nyquist and think that he's an anachronistic vestige of the Cold War, you know. You have a commie under every rock, and and Reese Committee or whatever. And but no, there it's still a communist agenda. But they realize that the language is recognized, so they end up going with things with, like communitarianism, and you know. So this is why whether it's fascism on the far right or communism on the far left, the bottom line is always tyrannical oligarchy.
That's kind of a false dialectic. I rather think that corporatism or fascism, Mussolini, I think, correctly styled it corporatism, and socialism and communism are actually ideologies and or philosophies of the left. They really are.
Because
it takes away from personal autonomy and our natural endowment.
Well, they pay lip service to that, right? No, I'm not saying there isn't a rhetorical distinction, but in communism, people get confused because socialism. People tend to think that socialism is like a light beer version of communism. You know, it's a communism light. Well, but that's not it at all. Socialism is an economic system. Communism is a political system that utilizes socialist economics, top to bottom. So, you know, socialism is the economic system utilized by communism. And, you know, the West is always wanting the open marketplace. I won't say free market because there's going to be a question of fair market. But, you know, the West has always, avoided socialism. Sometimes, occasionally, we do have socialist programs. For example, kidney dialysis was the first for the longest time, the first and only fully socialized medical treatment because of the costs were so prohibitive that simply nobody could afford it, so the federal government socialized kidney dialysis. So you see occasional, examples of socialism, but that's an exception, not certainly nowhere near the rule. But I acknowledge what you're saying about socialism and communism. They purport to be the opposite, of fascism. In fascism, corporations dictate to the government. In communism, the government dictates to corporations, theoretically, command and economy. But you still have the phenomenon that everybody's equal. It's just that some are more equal than others, just like in fascism. they'll do a lot of equality rhetoric, but it's never equal. They never attain it.
Well, you realize that when the communists take over, and remember, the uber-rich capitalist, the oligarchs, some have called them, and the communists are really oftentimes the same people. They're working in tandem.
Thank you for making my for agreeing with me. Yes, that's what I've been saying. End up with tyrannical oligarchy. Yes.
Well, for example, you're still probably in the middle class, given your career path, your profession. I know you're a nurse. But remember, there's 100 million Americans of working age that are out of work today. The middle class has been hollowed out. Manufacturing has been outsourced to formerly third world countries. These communist countries are now just as much capitalist as Americans are, by and large.
Right.
And the truth
of
the matter is
that dynamic in the dynamics in Russia and China of the evolution of a middle class of sorts, and yet they represent they still represent a relatively small stripe of the overall populace.
Well, and so it's the way I see it, though. I mean, we as a people, as Americans, for instance, I mean, we're still being socially engineered. And we have to ask ourselves, when we know historically the communists, who was their first target, in their particular caste system? Remember, it was the intelligentsia at the top. That's the oligarchs, the super rich.
Right.
Okay. Right. Then you had the nomenclatura. That would be the bureaucracy and the thought leaders. That emerge within that bureaucracy, and then you have the largest group, which was the middle class, known as the bourgeoisie. That was the group that was targeted, because they had to strip them of their property rights, deprive them economically, cast them into the ranks of the proletariat, which was the propertyless and the wage slave class, and that's what we see today.
So who did Pol Pot call to meetings and then execute? Pol Pot would go into a village. They'd call, the village elders or leaders or, the bourgeoisie types, the nurses, the teachers, people with reading glasses. If you could afford reading glasses and you were literate, you got lined up at the trench and you got shot in the back of the head and had lime dumped on your body and buried.
And the truth of the matter is we've got a new economy that's emerging today in this information age. And I dare say that we have what's known in the French as a dirigiste economy. It is a command and control economy. The people who are doing well in this economy is because the communitarian master planners want them to do well in this economy. And that's why you've elevated all these techies. Remember the GRIN technologies, genetics, robotics, information, and nanotech. What's the watchword within all of these career paths, within these industries? It is innovation, innovation, innovation. Now we've got this 5G that we're contending with. We've got this pandemic. We've got all this fear-mongering. And we have to ask ourselves, well, what's behind all of this? Are we not being socially engineered or not? We already understand that the establishment legacy media, the big media, so-called, it's not on our side.
Right.
We can't.
And yet we helped build it. We helped build it.
Indeed. We're coming on to a break. Stay with us if you'd like, Glenn. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, you can call in to 800-313-9443. And we'll be back. Just my hand. Yeah.
Hey, honey, I'm home.
I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Back. So anyway, great job today, Mike, on the tunes, mixing it up. I knew that I could count on you. All of y'all have better taste in. Still on the line, Glenn?
Yes, Mark. I'm still here. Yeah, that's some old Christopher Cross music, I believe, from the late 70s when I was in college.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, I enjoyed it still to this day. I want to bring to your listener, to the attention of yourself and the listeners, there's another piece on republicbroadcasting.org that you can do a site search for. Just look under columnist, the columnist archives. Just click on that left side of your page. beyond communitarianism, first things first, and Lark on communitarianism, you'll see something entitled Weaponizing the Language Closes the Doors of Human Perception. And I think you in particular might enjoy that, Glenn. But all y'all listening too, you know, the words that are italicized within that text are words that you're supposed to take particularly close attention to. And the one word that was incorrectly not italicized is the word political correctness.
Yeah, but it should be correctness. It should be in quotes, yeah.
Yeah, so I have that italicized only because I wanted the readers to take particular close attention to these words, because I'm including communitarian buzzwords within the text of these things. And maybe you've heard some of these words. Beyond community and political correctness, you might have heard the precautionary principle or responsibility to protect, noblesse oblige, volunteerism.
Or curating. Curating, yeah, I hear lately.
There's just so many. There's so many today. But
yeah, like when the Google person, I think, was saying, maybe YouTube, when they talk about, you know, deplatforming people, it's like, oh, well, our clients want a curated platform, meaning a, you know, manipulated platform, you know. But you curate a museum. You don't curate, you know, YouTube, you know. But I'm sorry, go ahead, if you were doing your list there, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'll tell you what I'd like to do at this moment is that, you know, I'm just going to share the language of this very short piece. You can find it at republicbroadcasting.org, columnist archives. This was a recent posting at RBN. Remember, I don't really put my stuff out there any other place except for Republic Broadcasting anymore. And it's because I just feel a closeness to the people on this network as I've been associated with it for 10 years. And you, Glenn, know that I'm a big fan of Chris Hinckley. I've been listening to Chris Hinckley since, I think, 2009, whenever he was already a mainstay at RBN when I first started listening to him. In fact, at one time, he had a one-hour Monday through Friday show closing out the evening during the regular program during the week. And so I was a frequent caller back then. So,
well, you don't have to be a graduate student in political philosophy to keep up with Chris, but it helps.
Well, he's pretty bright. In fact, most of the hosts on this network are pretty bright. They're all better hosts than I could ever be because they're just tremendous. I could say that Ingrid Castle, who's a new addition. She's been on the network in the past, but she's invited me to be a guest on her show called Immunize Wisely on the 28th of this month. So y'all can pick up on that show. That's Immunize Wisely. That would be on the weekends, I think. I think it starts at 7 o'clock and goes to 9 p.m. Central Time. So I'm looking forward to that because she's wonderful.
That sounds like a loaded term that requires some explication there. You know, immunize wisely.
Well, I bet you Ingrid will set you straight about that.
Yeah.
And particularly with her recent guest, Patrick Jordan, who's also been associated with this network in the past. But let me share this. Right. Let me share this piece with you, Glenn, and the listeners too. And I want you to, you know, you can follow along with me or just listen. It's short. Because I want you to understand how the language has been weaponized today. Weaponizing the language closes the doors of human perception. Political correctness, quote unquote, is only one such example. Today, philosophers and theologians, that I style religio-philosophers, scientists and legal theorists, social, cultural, political, economic, and behavioral theorists, that would be would-be philosopher kings and academicians too, all conspire to enslave the mind and to govern human action in the name of humanity or science and community, quote unquote. These priests of the mind speak of the precautionary principle, quote unquote. Then they speak of noblesse oblige, quote unquote. all the while citing their erudition and mere attempts to do good by others. They insist it is their responsibility to protect us. Responsibility, R2P, quote unquote, from ourselves. When such doors are systematically, cumulatively closed, enslavement of the mind of each and every man, woman, and child born into this material, spiritual plane of existence, tippy toes right on in. Man can literally volunteer him or herself into slavery. And in parentheses, I add, involuntary slavery is illegal, quote unquote. While voluntary slavery has never been made illegal, again, voluntary slavery, quote unquote. Witness the communitarian's enchantment today with volunteerism, quote unquote. Such a phenomenon is not nearly the same as voluntaryism, quote unquote. Yet it is voluntary servitude, again, quote unquote, which is very often communitarian policy, quote unquote, writ large. And this is this all in keeping with some spurious attempt to deny other men free will? Is this some well-meaning yet misguided attempt to deny man his connection to God and to unalienable rights, quote unquote, to logos? Is yearning to be free now thought somehow untenable? A lost cause? This is often what happens and will happen when the doors of perception, when the open doors of perception are closed. Man will have enslaved himself while consigning future generations to the same slavery he has himself unwittingly proscribed as this generation's final solution today. For modern slavery in a communitarian world is brought about slowly through a subtle imposition of coercion and force. It springs forth from the hearts and minds of thoroughly misguided, yes, laughingly fallible men. So remember, when it comes to rights in a communitarian world, communitarians believe that rights do not exist absent duties and responsibilities. The Bill of Rights is going away as we understand it under the Constitution. Rights which cannot be traded away are unalienable rights, as opposed to inalienable rights, those rights which can be traded away. And finally, I conclude that piece with the most famous quote, or one of the most, by the man who's been dubbed the most important philosopher of the 20th century, from Ludwig Wittgenstein. He said, "The limits of my language mean the limits of my world." So I wanted y'all to be apprised of that so you can read it and then take it in. And especially after you read Communitarianism, First Things First, and Lark on Communitarianism. And then believe it or not, in today's chat room, again, rbnlive.chachatango.com, you'll see that I've signed in as Numerican. And you'll see what I posted in there as the nine words. So it's not all doom and gloom, ladies and gentlemen. There are remedies if we choose the remedies. While we still have this thing called exercise of free will, perhaps we should use it.
Well, there's another component that we need, another element we need, of which there is a dearth, and that is courage. Modern people are sort of like, like junior high school kids are afraid of peer pressure. You can stand up and say, well, wait a minute, the emperor has no clothes. But people are afraid of disapproval. They're afraid. This is what you see in the Delphi technique. They have ringers in the audience to try and bring peer pressure against dissenters. So if you're going to stand up for something, you have to realize, that sometimes the nail that sticks out gets hammered down, and you have to count the cost of standing up for a principle. And people stick their fingers in the air. They try to figure out which way is the wind is blowing, and they try not to say anything that's going to get them kicked out of the cool kids' table in the lunchroom.
You know, there was a time in my life when I was a young teenager and then a young man coming of age, going to college. I only had this vague idea that somehow I wanted to be independent and I wanted to be a business person. And so I was very interested in food because I thought the whole problem of civilization is this problem of food. The whole problem of man is the fact that he has a poor diet. And anyway, I was involved in this industry for 40 years. I was a caterer. I was a chef. I was European trained. I was a restaurateur. I was a concessionaire. I was an employee. I was an employer. I was a serial entrepreneur. And finally, in 1994, at the age of 40, I finally had had enough. I realized from the very beginning of my journey as a young man that there was a problem with the provender that came into the back door of these various establishments in which I was employed in some capacity. The problem was in the provender, the foodstuffs themselves. I realized that the food supply had been poisoned, and I knew this when I was a teenager. So therefore, at 40 years old, I was desperate to find another solution because I was really unhappy. And remember, at 40 years old, I was at the top of my game. It takes at least a dozen years to make a decent European-trained chef. It is extremely difficult. And to work in that kind of industry is like being involved in a war on a daily basis. In Japan, where they have a fairly homogeneous population, and for which we have statistics going way back, it's today restaurant owners and chefs who have the highest mortality rate of any occupational group. In the U.S., they say it's surgeons or air traffic controllers. But do we really have good statistics? Because let's remember, this industry called the food industry is the largest industry on the planet.
Well, if you want,
I had to leave that industry, Glenn, because I realized that I was involved in organized crime, and I could not do a thing about it. I tried and tried and tried. I had to leave
it. Right. Well, and then plus psychologically, I mean, as a nurse, I always think of the operating room as a stressful environment because of the minutiae and the egos and stuff like that and the stress. But if you watch any of these cooking shows, these competitive cooking shows on TV, and you see somebody, some screaming Mimi yelling at people and calling them names, and it's just amazing. You know, in the name of providing people with a good meal, that people are, demeaned, and bludgeoned, browbeaten. You know, the stress level on these competitive shows is pretty bad. But
I think we both agree that just about anybody watches those kinds of broadcasts, and they're very popular. That's a pretty stressful environment for anybody to be a part of. It really is it's like being in a war. It really is. In fact, it was back in the 30s that the most preeminent chef of the time, Auguste Escoffier, a French chef, he actually codified the language of cuisine. He organized all of the various stations and departments using military language, and it's still used today in classical kitchens. That would be your hotel kitchens, your country clubs, and your fine dining establishments.
And who is that, Lark?
His name is Escoffier, spelled
E-S-C-E-S. Yeah, the Escoffier School, No. I was thinking of, I was reminded of the animated movie of Ratatouille, if you see how the kitchen is portrayed in that movie, you know, everybody's very perfectionistic, very OCD, very under the gun time-wise, and, you know, trying to get perfection and innovation and everything involved in everything. I just, you know, we see that portrayed even in a cartoon, for crying out loud.
You know, the last so-called Hollywood movie that I ever watched that I actually paid admission to was in, sometime back in the 80s, I think it was 1986, it was. And the movie was called Babette's Feast, which was an art house film.
Oh, yeah, Babette's, I remember that.
Babette's Feast. And that is the last movie that I ever paid to watch. And it's because I wanted to learn about this woman chef. It was based on a true story, who made her name in Paris by hiring herself out to well-to-do, even wealthy aristocrats and the like, even the nobility. And she was a rarity for her time because women were thought to be cuisine grand-mère, grandmother's cuisine. You know, they were home economists. They weren't chefs. Mm. They weren't cut out to do this kind of work because it's too arduous. And so I wanted to learn her story because, of course, she escaped from Paris during the time of the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror. That's where we get this word terroir or terrorist. It's from the Jacobin. That's also where we get this English language word called ideologie, the science of ideas. This sprung from the Jacobins during that time of the Reign of Paris during the French Revolution, 1789 and 1791. But she escaped to by ship because they were after anybody that was associated with the nobility. Remember, they pulled off another killing of the king's ritual. Remember King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. And, you know, we have to ask ourselves, where did this word guillotine come from? Well, that was actually the name of a Frenchman. Look him up. Guillotine. Mm. And in any event, she escaped to, I believe, somewhere in Scandinavia. I want to say Norway or Sweden. And she came into the company of a couple of old maid or spinster sisters. Now, these spinster sisters were quite renowned. They were famously very pious, very strong Christians. They had a very rigid lifestyle. And yet, at one time, they had been courted by some of the most famous and wealthiest people in Sweden or Norway, wherever this was set. But anyway, their food was also very Spartan. I mean, it was almost like slop.
Mm-hmm.
So what she did is she won the lottery. She got word of it by snail mail, which was, of course, very slow at that in those days. And she was able to collect her winnings. And remember, she's hiding out because she doesn't want anyone to know where she is. She's escaped from Paris because she knows that if she stayed in Paris, she'd probably be killed because of her associations with the oligarchs, the nobility, the aristocrats of the time. And to make a long story short, she decided that she was going to prepare a meal just as if she was living in Paris, just for these two wonderful spinster sisters. And she asked them if she could prepare a meal for them. And would she please invite, or would the sisters invite their friends? And so there must have been about 10 people involved that attended this dining experience. And it was quite charming to see the lengths that she had to go through just to procure the foodstuffs necessary to prepare a French meal a la grand cuisine. because she intended to just do her best work. And she wasn't pleasing the aristocrats. She wasn't pleasing anybody except these wonderful sisters who had taken her in so that she could hide out from these rioters and these madmen in Paris. And I'll never forget that meal. And the people that she had invited included, or the sisters had invited, included regular people, people that did work for the ladies, you know, for trade or barter, that were associated with their church. Their father had been a famous minister in Sweden or Norway and the like. But one of the gentlemen that was invited was a proper military general. He was famous throughout the land. He was a famous military man. And of course, being a military man, he had the benefit of living in other countries. He'd experienced other worlds, far from this small, windswept, cold, icy village in Norway or Sweden. And anyway, he did not recognize it, but he realized that meal was prepared by one of the greats of Paris cuisine of the day. He couldn't quite place where he had experienced these dishes, but he was guessing. And it was just a fascinating movie. But I have to tell you, I haven't been to a movie since, and I don't have any intention of ever going back to see a Hollywood movie. And to this day, I have to tell you, my heart is still in that world. My heroes were people who were fishermen. They were foragers. They were farmers. They were ranchers. And to this day, I think so highly of these people. These are my heroes. If we're going to live in civilization, the people that provide the food, that actually care about the quality of the food, how it's grown, how it's raised, the treatment of animals and how they're raised. You know?
Well, don't you realize that there's really not that much to farming? You dig a hole, you put in some seed, you put some water on it, and the sun makes the plant grow. And to paraphrase Bloomberg of late.
Yeah, that reminds me of Old Man Terrell. One of the first jobs I ever had, I got a job as a landscaper when I was about 14 in Bossier City, Louisiana. Mr. Terrell owned a landscaping company. He's about as hard-nosed and hard-scrabble as you can imagine, and just as crude. But he said, well, now I'll tell you. You take the seed and you stick it in the ground. And then you take a little bit of shite and you stick it over the seeds. And then you cover it all up with a little bit of dirt. Throw on a little bit of water. And there you have it. That's all you need to know about life, son.
That sounds like Bloomberg was quoting him. I don't know.
I'll never forget that. Yeah, he told me.
The arrogance is just appalling. just appallinger. But hey, Lark, I got to cut and run. But it was great. Nice chatting with you. I'll be listening. But I have to attend to some duties here.
All right. Well, it's very nice of you to call in, Glenn. Appreciate it.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
Bye. All right. Very good. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you too can join in. You don't have to listen to me blather on. Remember that number is 800-313-9443. Remember, I live in Texas. People down here, they talk a little bit slow. In fact, a lot of the locals, the natives, especially the rural folk, they don't much trust people that have city ways and talk Remember, I'm not from Texas. I'm Lark in Texas. My family's been here since 1969. I mean, I respect these people. And I had to learn the hard way. But, yeah, we talk slow down here. We don't trust the fast talkers. It takes a long time to get to know somebody because people want to know who you are as a man. What are your principles? What do you stand on? Is your word your bond? Before they'll even open up to you. But anyway, bear in mind, the chat room is rbnlive.chatango.com. That number is 800-313-9443. And it looks like we've got a couple callers. How about that? Murray, Wisconsin, will bring you up right after the break. How about that? Same with you, David, in Ohio.
Put your head on my shoulder. Hold me in your arms, baby. Squeeze me oh so tight. Show me that you...
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Came down. They'd all been born Sanctuary fades, congregation splits, nightly military raids, the congregation splits, it's the song of assassins, ringing in your ears.
Okay, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our final segment here of the second hour. This is a short segment, and we've got a couple callers on the line. You two can call in, 800-313-9443, and join the discussion. We've got Murr on the line from Wisconsin. How are you, Murr?
I'm good, Lark. You sound good. Is your friend still there with you?
Well, let's see. I think Glenn had to go back to work, or he had other things
to
do.
Well, I meant Mark.
No, Mark had to dash because Mark, you know, he does a lot of activism work locally. I mean, this guy's one of the hardest working people I know. He is reaching out to the locals. He's doing a lot of traveling. But, you know,
I like that he has that Windows on the World, because they can't really say he copyrighted because they dustified them. So.
Yeah, and I actually knew some people that were there on 9/11 at Windows on the World. But, Mark is a busy guy. He really is, but he's very well-informed, and he's a media guy. He's a filmmaker. He's just a wonderful guy. And, you know, if we do this again, if I sit in for Mike again this week, I'll try to have him back on.
Yeah.
Because he's just a wealth of information. But I really don't know anybody that works harder than Mark
Windows.
I
really appreciate these different folks you're getting acquainted with that pick up so quickly on communitarianism, really, and like Reiser is and others, you know, because you've been planting these seeds a long time, and Nikki and Nordica, you know, and then seeing that with Chris Hinckley, the last thing there with Amitai Etzioni, Werner Falk, and then watching Bibi Netanyahu on Brendan O'Connell's, and I came across a bit shoot, a rare 1930s, about the Jews. And it's the same thing. You look at them, and it's the same thing. It's the same control mechanism. It was the same control mechanism in France, the Jacobins. Yippee.
Well, I have a kind of a... an alternate message to deliver as this pertains to communitarianism, as you understand. Hold on there, Murr, and other callers as well. We'll take this top of the hour break, and we'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Yeah. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.